Michelle told you a story about Gertrude Evans and being brave. I want to tell you another story about being brave. This story begins on a hot, dry September day in 1863, when 19-year-old Martin Van Buren Buchanan left the slave quarters on the Oatlands plantation, just south of here down the road, heading for Washington, D.C., so he could join the Union Army. The 5'3" young man couldn't read and he couldn't write, and he probably possessed nothing but the clothes he was wearing, and if he was lucky, he was wearing a pair of shoes. He walked down the hill past Mistress Carter's big brick house full of Union soldiers. He said goodbye to his sisters Betty and Ginny and Mahala and his father Robert, and then continued down the cobblestone driveway that his ancestors had built. Turning north onto the Carolina Road was this road in those days. Most likely he walked the dusty, hard-packed road the 5 miles to Leesburg, past the Widow Daniels farm, her Confederate sergeant husband, dead 2 years, past John Elgin's farm, right up here on the hill behind us, Elgin away in a Confederate regiment, and then past Joseph Wirtz, further down the road, Mrs. Wirtz's two brothers in blue uniforms, and on he traveled. He may have walked the 50 miles down the Leesburg Turnpike, the safest route to Washington, or he could have gotten a ride in a farm wagon carrying some of Loudon's crops to feed the army there. Either way, it must have taken extraordinary courage to leave his home and his family and venture out into a world completely unknown and definitely unfriendly to him. Why did Martin, and a couple of months later his future brother-in-law James Gaskins, do it? Was it the lure of the $50 bounty they would get to substitute for white men who had been drafted and didn't want to serve? Or was it the call of adventure young men have always heard in times of war? Or was it the desire to be free and to fight for their own freedom that motivated them? Perhaps they felt, like Henry Bibb, a slave who ran away from a Kentucky plantation 4 times, was recaptured 3 times before successfully escaping to Canada. He wrote in his autobiography that all his life, from a young child even, he had had a longing, a desire, a fire for liberty within his breast, which was never quenched. Martin and James knew that officially they were free that January when Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation declared them free, but freedom wasn't real. There was no guarantee it was permanent, while others kept fighting to keep them enslaved. So determined to fight for their own freedom, they left, enlisted as privates in the 2nd Infantry, U.S. Colored Troops, were sent to Florida, fought in skirmishes there, and didn't return to Virginia for 3 years. The story of Martin Buchanan was just one of the many things I learned in the process of completing the application for this church to become listed on the National Registry of Historic Places. As I read history books, looked up land deeds, marriage, birth, and census records, the town of Gleedsville and its inhabitants became real. And I was awed by the monumental effort it must have been to go from being an enslaved non-person one day, without any control over what you did, where you lived, what happened to those you loved, to being a free person the next day, completely responsible for providing food, shelter, and direction for yourself and family. An ex-slave in South Carolina wrote in 1871, "We have lived a century in the past few years." When Martin and James arrived home that day in 1865, 70 of the newly freed people remained at Oatlands to welcome them. There were Buchanans, Washingtons, and lots of Days, Gleeds, Johnsons, Murrays, and Moores. For generations, these families had tilled the fields, cared for the gardens, raised the animals, constructed roads and buildings, and they had raised their families there, Their roots were deep. This was their home. Where else would they want to go? So they stayed. And they did overcome the insurmountable obstacles they faced on that day. Their minds, hearts, and souls were consumed with the hope of a new life. They had endured long years of arduous work, substandard housing, minimal nutrition, and always fear. They were willing to endure almost anything to build their new lives for themselves and their families. They had the kind of hope, in the words of President Obama, the kind of hope that despite all evidence to the contrary, something better awaits us if we have the courage to reach for it, to work for it, and to fight for it. At Oatlands, George and Kate Carter were broke. In those first years after the war, they needed the freed workers just as much as the freed workers needed the Carters. It appears that they all lived right there on Oatlands and farmed, sharing the crops. But it took only 5 years, 5 short years before this striving, persevering group of people were renting land and building their own houses around the edges of Oatlands. And in those first few years, they managed to accumulate property. At a time when a horse cost about $75 and a cow about $35, and an acre of Loudoun County land cost $50, Jackleed was worth $250. Now I'm guessing he had a plow and a mule, absolutely. And I don't know what else, maybe a cow. However, it took another 5 years for anyone to actually purchase their own piece of land. By the late 1880s, official county documents referred to the settlement at the corner of Mountain Gap Road and Old Carolina Road as the town of Gleedsville, and the road leading to that town from Leesburg as Gleedsville Road. During these years, they were sustained by family and community. In this small village, as in the 10 or so other small villages that were settled by groups of freed people in Loudoun County, the families were closely related to each other, and they knew they must help each other just to make it through these first difficult years. Throughout the South, mutual aid societies were formed to lend a helping hand to others in times of trouble. You paid some dues every week, and the dues helped the sick or jobless. Lodge number 2047 of the Grand United Order of the Odd Fellows was formed right here in Gleedsville, and they bought the land right over there that we park on now. As the rest of America proudly advanced down the path of rugged individualism, African Americans went down a different road, developing a strong ethic of mutual cooperation. But just existing, finding shelter and feeding themselves was not all they wanted as soon as they were free. At the same time they worked to prosper economically, the newly freed people fought for their rights as citizens, even though Loudoun County tried to deny them these rights. They didn't give up when the county tried to keep them from being on juries. They formed the Colored Men's Society of Loudoun County, openly protested and sued for their rights. They exercised their right to vote. Large numbers of African American men registered as soon as they could and voted in large numbers to the end of the century. They especially wanted their children to have what they had been denied, an education. When Virginia instituted free public schools in 1870, Loudoun County built a school for white children only in the Gleedsville area. It took Jack Gleed and others pressuring the county for a number of years before a black school was built about a quarter of a mile down Gap Road. Of course, it was smaller than the white school, and not built as well, but it was a school. By 1890, the residents of the town of Gleedsville were making significant strides. Many were landowners, many had trades. They were blacksmiths and carpenters and laundresses, and there was even a midwife here. Over half the children were going to school. And at this point, they decided to build a church. After emancipation, African Americans wanted to have their own churches where they would not have to sit in the balconies and worship the white way. The Gleedsville residents called their church Mount Olive Methodist Episcopal Church. This denomination was growing among the newly freed because it emphasized that social action was as important as religious ritual. The mission statement of the Methodist Episcopal denomination stated, "Preach the gospel, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, house the homeless, provide jobs for the jobless." Sort of like ours. This site was purchased for $18, and I've been told that the first members erected this building themselves, taking stones from the fields across the street for the foundation, and cutting large old pine trees on this lot for the siding, for the floor that you walk on, and the pews you're sitting on. Little did the members of this congregation know in October 12, 1890, when they dedicated this building, that they still had a very long struggle ahead of them before they achieved their dream of equality. And that it would not be they, but their great-grandchildren would finally achieve it. First, they lost their rights as citizens when Virginia passed a new set of black laws and legislated legal segregation. All the gains won with such effort after the war were lost piece by piece. The final blow came in the 1920s when they lost the ability to make a living here. With the mechanization of farming, the local farmers no longer needed their help. Entire families left in search of a better life. Martin Buchanan, the young man who walked bravely off to war, full of hope for the future, left Gleedsville for good when he was in his 70s, finding work as a servant in Leesburg. I've often been asked, why do we decide to apply for the National Historic Registry in the first place? And I'm going to be very honest with you right now. It wasn't anything noble. It started as a way to hopefully avoid VDOT from commandeering land out front to expand the width of the road. But underneath, behind it all, there was a growing feeling among us that there was something special about this space that we wanted to preserve. And on the Sunday that I announced the church application was approved, a member who was an architect, Wayne Williams, took me aside at coffee hour to tell me how pleased he was, explaining that to him as an architect, this building is definitely a special building. And it is special because it has soul. And all great buildings have soul, he said. Then he dragged me up here, and he started pointing around. He says, now look at these walls here. Look at these. You had to know, Wayne. See that? That's shiplap. That's the way they used to build wooden ships. Now look up. Look up at the ceiling. See the way the walls and the ceiling meet at the front and the back? Very odd, very unusual, he said. But it looks like an arc. Upside down to me. Yes, I had to agree. If you turn it upside down, it did look like an ark. This building was their ark, their ship of dreams. It was sailing on a turbulent sea for them, but it stayed afloat in those untamed waters, a ship they believed that would carry them safely to a new place. The builders of this ship of dreams had endured generations of pain and injustices. As they sang on Sundays, nobody knows the troubles I've seen. Through all, they persevered, their dreams, their hopes in their hearts. They endured it all because they truly believed the arc of the moral universe eventually would bend towards justice. Now we are sailing on this ship with our cargo, our box of seven principles. Storms have come and been weathered, with our ship still making progress on its journey. But now a new storm is brewing. I feel the cold wind blowing in my face, Have you noticed the waters around us getting rougher? I know Natalie has as the Arctic shelf melts. I know Bob has as voting rights are chipped away. I know Michelle has as public school teachers are demeaned. I know Jerry has as transgender youth are made pawns in a political game. I know Barbara in her pink hat has as women's rights have been threatened. What do we do as the wind becomes a gale and the waves slam into our boat, rocking it dangerously from side to side? Do we just give up? Do we abandon ship? Do we find a place to hide away and ignore the storm until hopefully it's past? I've heard that suggestion. Or do we boldly raise the storm jib and steer into the wind until we reach our destination? The first sailors on this ship are whispering to us. Can you hear them? They are saying, stay the course. We did it. Yes, freedom is costly. You must hold hands and refuse to be divided. I read something recently. I don't know who said it, but I love it. This person said, Reverend King talked about the arc of the moral universe that would bend towards justice. But it won't bend on its own. You have to jump on it, drag it, twist it, pull it down towards justice. You have to influence that arc. So I say, all hands on deck. We may not survive this storm intact without all of us jumping, dragging, twisting, and pulling down that arc. The president of the UUA this week asked all UU congregations and each of us individually to sign a declaration of conscience, which I've included in your order of service. And it ends with the words, as people of conscience, we declare our commitment to translate our values into action as we stand on the side of love with the most vulnerable among us. The time is now, he said. The time is now. May we heed the call. Blessed be.